What is that? Is that a bomb? What is that? It's beeping. Put it down, Bucky. It's beeping.
That was a Kamoyo bead. That's another Kamoyo bead. White Wolf still at it.
Someone's leaving breadcrumbs for you, dude.
And they I was wondering when you were gonna show up.
That. Oh shit!
That's AO.
Wakanda. We got Wakanda.
Welcome back to New Rock Stars, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Episode 3, episode titled Power Broker, teams up Sam and Bucky with Dance Off to Save the Universe contender Baron Zemo and Sharon Carter hopping from Germany to Madripoor to the Baltic with a dash of Wakanda in there. Yep, this Dora Milaje cameo is actually way bigger than just mere vengeance for T'Chaka. I'm telling you. And Sharon Carter, what's going on with her? We'll talk about that. That's a question for Inside Marvel, New Rock Stars After Show for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Eric Voss here with MT.
What's going on?
How you doing
on
after this episode, MT?
Oh man, this episode was pretty good. I've been missing Sharon Carter for so long, so it's so great to see her kick ass. Like, she really messed up some dudes, and I'm all here for it.
This episode felt like a John Wick kind of fever dream in a way. Going to Madripoor with, you know, those bounty alerts on their phones, Sharon Carter throwing knives through people's arms. Mm-hmm. It felt like they took characters that we knew from Civil War and then just said, what if they were this instead?
Right? What if they were John Wick flavored? Let's find out.
Yeah. A lot of fun action. Some very confusing characterization at times that we have questions about. Apparently, German prisons have never had a prison riot before because it was way too easy for a supervillain to escape that prison.
I mean, maybe they were just well-behaved prisoners up until that point, and then they're just like, we've never had a riot before. How do we handle this? Security?
On chess day? We're really having a fight on chess day, guys? I thought we had a deal. Okay. In this after show, we're going to answer your biggest WTFs, which to us, of course, stands for... What the Falcon? So, in this episode, episode 3, Bucky helps Zemo break out of this prison. At first, it seems hypothetically, but just kidding, it's pathetically, which I guess means far too easily and way too fast. Really just writers saying, we just need him out of prison, okay? Don't question it.
Yeah.
And then apparently this whole gritty Sokovian militant version of Zemo that we saw in Civil War also had a ton of you money. He was a baron.
He was
part
a rich
of royalty.
Man.
A bunch of cars. He loves classic cars. The chemistry among this trio was really fun to watch. They take this private jet to Madripoor, where they team up with Sharon Carter, who is a faithful government agent in Captain America Winter Soldier and Civil War, turned insane John Wick universe character.
Yeah.
Who's now like an art dealer. Sure. And they all together track down through a bunch of like deals being made to this guy, Dr. Nagel, which is an interesting name from the comics. He was part of Project Rebirth, the whole Isaiah Bradley program. In this show, he's a scientist who bounced from Hydra to the CIA to the power broker and ended up replicating 20 doses of super soldier serum that were since stolen by the Flag Smashers, who I guess plan to give it to kids. Come on, kids.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the last group of people I would give any sort of power to, but hey.
Right.
Maybe not.
And then in the final scene, Bucky follows a trail of Kamoyo beads to Adora Milaje. This is Ayo.
Wakanda. Yeah. We got some Wakanda representation.
We had some nice Wakanda drums there, too. Oh, so man. Cool.
I missed it. I didn't know how much I missed that music until it happened. I was like, oh my God, it's been so long since Black Panther.
I know. So we're going to talk about this Black Panther crossover. We're going to talk about Zemo. We're going to talk about Sharon Carter and why she's probably not the power broker herself. Yeah. I know some of you are saying she must be the power broker. No. But she is weird as hell on the show. So we're going to talk about why
really
that's
sketchy.
The case. Yeah. Oh, and real quick, I am wearing our latest obsession shirt. This is Anarchy Assembled. You can get these at newrockstarsmerch.com. If you do, you'll unlock an additional option to write in a custom shout out that will appear at the bottom of these Inside Marvel after shows. For example, we got Jeff Jackson, famous Jeff Jackson.
Hey, I love that reference.
He says, don't trust the therapist. Yeah. Trust therapists in general. We'd all do better with a
please.
Bit of therapy.
Therapy is great. If you need therapy, go to therapy. But, you know, I do understand what they're saying with don't trust the therapist. Because, like, the camera angles on episode 1 were kind of weird. But, We'll see.
And then Oliver Holmes says, I really hope that Arnim Zola will come into the show. Hey, Oliver, you and us
right?
together on that
Welcome
Zola
Welcome to the Zola train. Let's go.
Zola.
We'll punch your ticket.
Any way that we can try to work Zola into this, we will. And then Sabrina Baskerville says, Lil Nas X is Mephisto.
Clearly. Yeah. It was very clear with that.
I think, yeah, he boldly declared himself as such. I love it.
Honestly, I would love if Kevin Feige just made him Mephisto. Like,
yes!
Fuck it.
Oh, he would be perfect for the role. So good. All right, MT, what's our first What the Falcon?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Ari, because the first What the Falcon of the day is, What the Falcon is the Dora Milaje Ayo doing here in this program?
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this ending scene. Ayo, this actress is Florence Kasumba. She was really second in command of Wakanda's Dora Milaje Royal Guard. She served right underneath Okoye, and she was actually the first member of the Dora Milaje we met, appearing in Captain America Civil War, and she was T'Challa's bodyguard, and she later reappeared in Black Panther and Avengers Infinity War. Actually, we weren't sure if she was still alive, because the last time we saw her, she was facing off with Corvus Glaive to protect Shuri, as Shuri was racing to detach the Mind Stone from Vision. So our buddy Vision is getting reconnected with this. I love it.
Hey.
This episode reminded us, of course, that Zemo was the actual man responsible for King T'Chaka's death, and the Wakandas are just not going to let that go. So now it seems like Ayo is just there to bring Zemo to justice. Sure, makes sense, but Wakanda crossing over into the storyline broadens the map of the series even further. It means Bucky's past as the White Wolf is going to be even more important to this show. Because at the same time on the show, MT, you've noticed this, the history of Erskine's Super Soldier Serum is really at the heart of it.
Yeah.
And in this episode, we talked about its origins with Red Skull and how Erskine was originally working with Red Skull. And then it went to Cap and it bulked him up. And then Hydra tried to recreate it for their Winter Soldier program. And then we know it went to Isaiah Bradley. And then Dr. Nagel and the CIA. The CIA is involved in this. And then after the snap happened, he ended up on the other side of that, joining the Power Broker. And then that's where the Flag Smashers stole it. But throughout all this history, there's always been one missing piece to it. We're always wondering what made Erskine's serum different when he gave it to Cap versus when he gave it to Red Skull. What was that missing ingredient?
It's probably barbecue sauce, honestly.
Pretty much, yeah. Add barbecue sauce. Sriracha or a bit of tapatio.
Yeah, you just like, we just throw some in there, some parsley, just do some trial and error. That's a very good point, because like, we just don't know what made that Steve Rogers formula so potent, so perfect.
So perfect. And I think we might have a big clue here, based on the themes of this series and the show now extending its roots to Wakanda, that Erskine might have derived a component of this serum from the Wakandan heart-shaped herb.
Oh.
Now, that has been brought up in MCU theories before. I think we've talked about it on this channel plenty of times. But that would be the one missing ingredient, and it would stay true to this whole idea of Captain America's legacy using a shield made of vibranium, presumably taken from Mount Bashanga or somewhere in Wakanda. All vibranium in the world is like considered to be property of the Wakandan people. And now in this case, he could be empowered by another resource that you could argue is appropriated, colonized from that soil. So now Ayo could be the key to that missing link. Do you think I'm
so
onto anything here, MT?
I really, really like that, because like, the MCU is a very science-heavy and logic-heavy universe. So to bring it back to, like, all right, so Erskine possibly went to Wakanda or possibly just found this heart-shaped herb and used the science behind the herb to develop the formula, I would love that to just wheel around, because then it would explain Black Panther's physiology when he had it, and also Killmonger when he took the black herb as well. So I'm the heart shaper as well. So like, I really, really love that theory. I like.
Well, and then Nagel says in this episode, he's like, I refined the process. No more like muscle growth or anything like that. It's it's subtle.
Yeah.
And that's what it is in Black Panther. It's just the purest version of it. It just enhances their agility, their strength, their speed when they take it in. And when Erskine talks about what his cocktail was made of, he also talked about steroids to stimulate growth and these Vita rays or all these other things on top of it. But like, basically, it's the difference between ecstasy and MDMA, you know? It's, you know,
yeah,
it's a purer version. It's not the same thing, but it makes you feel the same. You can just, like, brool all night with that stuff.
Dude, I love that they went to the club in this episode. I was just dying. It's like, hey, we need some time to kill. Let's take Zemo to the club. Let's just and Zemo dancing, like, just really lame.
They gave us just enough time to make a gif out of it. Thank you. Thank you, editor of the show.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to our editors, by the way. I ended up working in a shout out to our editors there because I don't thank them enough. John and Josh and our whole team.
They are wonderful. Everybody that does work on the show, like magicians, all of you, we love you. Thank you, guys.
Our whole, yeah, off-screen staff, Brandon Barrick and Zach Huddleston, all you guys.
All of you.
We love
you. Mwah.
But now that we have Ao in the show, I didn't think we would see a Black Panther reference this soon. MT, do you think we'll get any reference to T'Challa or what his status is at this
see,
point?
See, that's the first thing I thought of when I saw Ao. I was like, are we going to get an update? Like, what's going to go on? I hope so. I think that the next episode, we're going to find out what exactly, or get a hint at what's going on with T'Challa. Because I honestly do think that Kevin Feige is waiting for like a theatrical release where more eyes will be on it to announce, you know, A, what's happening with Cap, first of all, and B, what is going to go on with, obviously, with Chadwick Boseman's death and the character of T'Challa. So I do think we're gonna get some sort of hint towards the fate of T'Challa in the next
episode. I think they'll probably leave the door open in a lot of ways because a lot of this was written and shot before Chadwick passed away. And they did do some reshoots that were after that, but I have to imagine this was all before. Or at least it was her role in the show was planned before. But it is interesting that Ao is kind of our globe-trotting spy now, and normally she, as the Dora Milaje, has to kind of protect the royal, the monarch of the country. So does her, and they do, the Dora Milaje do often jump around the world, as we saw in the Black Panther movie. She flanked him at the UN, but normally it's like with the monarch. They don't usually go out on their own. But do you think this could mean like maybe if Ao is head of this royal guard, could Okoye have stepped up as a new Black Panther? That'd be an interesting.
I would love to see Okoye as the new Black Panther. I personally would like, I want to see, Nadia, I believe was it, Black Panther's love interest. Become Nakia, the next Black Panther. But Okoye would be an excellent, step up.
What I kind of want is like, the Black Panther and the throne of Wakanda don't have to be the same. It would be great if Shuri could be the ruler of Wakanda and then Okoye could be the Black Panther figure. Or that M'Baku could play one of these roles, because he's obviously a great leader and a great partner.
So M'Baku would be a great choice for Black Panther. Yeah. He's got the charisma. He's got the guns. he would be fantastic. But yes, I do like the idea of Shuri being a ruler, but also like a ruler slash woman in the chair for Okoye, because Shuri's like super smart, obviously. So it'd be a nice little like, you know, I'm a ruler, but I'm also your tech person, and like you're the one kicking ass. So like, I do like that idea.
I'm just thinking like, if you're Malcolm Spellman and you want to bring in a Wakandan royal guard in this show, like his end goal, I think, is to try to expose like the real history of the Captain America legacy. Yeah. And like in the same way that it was denied, that dream was deferred for Isaiah, like maybe that dream was originally his birthright if you make it something that was rooted in Wakanda. So I'd love to see them go in that direction. I don't think it would be that controversial because we already know that vibranium shield came from Wakanda, you know?
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I imagine if they like secretly make like, you know, Isaiah Bradley have Wakandan origins. That'd be super dope. It's like, hey, we had the first Black Captain America was actually Wakandan. So this is a Wakandan legacy.
But I think, so we'll see what comes out of that. I think it's really cool that I thought just references to Wakanda and the White Wolf were just kind of like, we're referencing other things that happened before. But for them to actually bring in a character from that corner of the universe is really cool. I'm very excited.
When Bucky started picking up those beads, I was like, no. But they did it. I was like, oh shit. Anyway.
yeah. So we're going to talk more about Sharon Carter, the Power Broker, Zemo, all these other questions. First, we want to thank some people who helped us make this episode. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Mm-hmm. So is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? Well, BetterHelp assesses your needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating with them in under 48 hours. Now, this is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's just professional counseling done securely online. Now, this service is available for clients worldwide. You can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room with, you know, as you might with traditional therapy. And BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Just visit their website and read their testimonials. Visit betterhelp.com/marvel. That's BetterHelp.com/Marvel and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for Inside Marvel listeners, you can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Marvel. We also want to thank our friends at Magic Spoon for sponsoring us. So lots of us are trying to eat better, but healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but without all the bad stuff. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. Get yourself a variety pack of the 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. Get creative and mix the cocoa and peanut butter for a peanut butter cup vibe.
Delicious.
Pretty good. Go to magicspoon.com/marvel to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MARVEL at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/marvel and use the code MARVEL to save $5 off. Thank you to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode. All right, MT, back to our What the Falcons. I want to know from you, who the Falcon is the Power Broker? He comes up so much this episode.
Yes. So apparently, Power Broker is a crime lord who lives in Madripoor, this new city that we have...
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Gone to in episode 3 of Falcon the Winter Soldier. Now, it seems like he has bad blood with Zemo. Baron Zemo, apparently. This rich Zemo. And from a deleted scene in Civil War in which Zemo gassed an arms dealer at an auction.
Yeah, do you think that could have been it? Right? I mean, like, there was that moment where Zemo just kind of made enemies with a lot of high-powered crime figures around the world, these international black market dealers. Like, that could have been the moment where he's like, you killed someone.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, Zemo's just, like, a dick in general. So, like, I'm not surprised that he has, like, you know, bad blood with this Power Broker guy. But I think that that could be a very good hint towards, you know, potentially what happened in the past. Mm-hmm. But with deleted scenes, it's kind of hard because, like, is it canon? Is it not canon? I don't know. But
yeah, deleted scenes technically aren't really canon, but it shows intent. Which I
yes,
like.
It does show that they were thinking about it at the very least. Uh-huh. But the Power Broker, as we see at the end credits of Falcon and Winter Soldier, that he's always watching. So, like, does he have a surveillance or a spy network? Could Zola be behind the John Wick bounty app? Zola.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Zola.
Yeah, because, MT, that was a whole big thing. This Selby person got shot, and literally, like, 20 seconds later, word got out on this app, like, this is a bounty, this is who they are. It seemed like there was some kind of sophisticated technology behind that. So either the power broker had eyes on that scene, maybe through Sharon Carter, and then they had that app ready to go. And this is just something that happens in this world, kind of John Wick style. They automatically all get notified. But yeah, I thought that was interesting for Zola to be behind it. I hope
is the technology man, and it makes sense. Like, this power broker, he's fast. Like, he'd be texting Carly mad fast, and he's always watching. So, like, it would make sense for Zola to be just behind all this.
That reveal, MT, would be so wild.
It
you know,
would
like,
be. I will finally, jump out of my skin just celebrating.
It would be some Wizard of Oz shit. They're like, "Are you ready to meet the power broker?" And it's just a green face on a giant screen.
Fucking love that. I would literally be so hype. So hype.
I mean, MT and I just did a video this week. We were both on it. MT did all the legwork and like telling us this history of the power broker in the comics. Go watch that video. MT does such a good job in that video. First time in the Blue Dungeon. It's weirdly cold in here, right?
Yes, it's cold, but I'm glad that Philip feeds us regularly. He's a very nice man.
It's just a bag of rice, not moist. Not cooked or anything, just dry rice.
It's just
rice.
The raw rice. He gives us one bag of rice a day. We share it.
And you have to finish it. There's not a grain. He'll look around for the grain.
Yes, he will float around the blue void for any grain. Uh-huh. If you leave a grain, there's no rice tomorrow.
Right. yeah, but in that video, we were kind of going into some theories of who we think this power broker figure could be, because we knew, obviously, this show is setting it up to be something big. MT had this cool theory about how White Vision from WandaVision could be connected to that. After this episode, MT, I'm feeling pretty good about this Mandarin Ten Rings theory.
Like,
the fact that he's a crime lord, they use this kind of place as, like, a pirate colony, pretty much. Like, how many criminal warlords are there in this universe? Probably a lot, but the one that they're setting up in a title this year is going to be the Mandarin.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if the Mandarin shows up at some point or is directly referenced in this episode, because the Mandarin, as we saw in the All Hail the King short, He's not messing around. He's sort of watching people. Like, he's watching Trevor in prison, and he's got like agents all over the place.
Right. Yeah. There was like, and Feige even said this at the Comic-Con panel. The dude in Iron Man 2 who gives Ivan Vanko his like his new identity paperwork. That dude was in the Ten Rings. The guy in Ant-Man who was touring the Pym facility to try to get the Yellow Jacket tech. He had a Ten Rings tattoo that was clear in his last angry face looking shot before he got punched and knocked out. So, like, these guys are everywhere. And, like, and what I like about the Mandarin theory is that he is, Mandarin's not exactly hiding. You know, he's hiding in Madripoor, but he's not a Kaiser Soze figure that much. Yeah. Whereas if it were someone like Thaddeus Ross is a government official in the U.S. government. I don't think he'd be able to pull off, like, a shadowy side figure whose name was the power broker who had graffiti everywhere, like, you know, declaring his existence. Like, if anything, he would not have another alias. He would, or he wouldn't be like proud about it. He'd be sneaky. This is someone who likes to flaunt it a bit. And the Mandarin is someone who likes to flaunt.
Yeah. I honestly sort of hope it's the Mandarin, because it would be perfect setup for Shang-Chi. And the Mandarin, he's not someone to be trifled with. He will mess you up, and people are very much afraid of this man. So it would be really cool for at least a player, at the very least, a player in this series that is teased for Shang-Chi in the future.
So, yeah.
We'll see. The third with the Falcon for today is, what the Falcon is Sharon Carter's real agenda, Eric?
Yeah.
That is a good question.
A lot of people are saying Sharon Carter's the power broker. No. I don't think Sharon Carter is the power broker, just because the power broker sounds like someone who for decades has kind of built up this empire. Sharon only as of 2016 did start to have to resort to flee to, and I don't think she would have the time to build up. I think she is an arms dealer. I think her character's super weird now. I like seeing her fight, to that she would be this like kind of arms dealer who would weirdly laugh off stuff and then in the next second complain how she can't call her dad anymore. And then the weird thing is at the end of the episode, she gets in the back of this car and she goes, "We've got a big problem. Actually, a couple of them. I'll tell you in the car. Let's go." And then she has a driver. Like, that was interesting. So I'm thinking her couple of problems was One, that Dr. Nagel is dead. I think she might be working for the Power Broker, and Power Broker needed Nagel to, and that was new information for her, for Sharon Carter. And that he had died. And then secondly, I think the problem is that people know. Like, Sharon wasn't in that lab at the time. For most of it, she was doing all the legwork to, you know, defend it outside. Good Lord. Yep. But I think she feels threatened now that Zemo is out, that Bucky and Sam know this information, and that this poses a problem to the Power Broker.
Yes. It would be very interesting to see a Sharon Carter working for the Power Broker, potentially, because, like, she is kind of just assed out of luck. She just got kicked out of America, essentially, and she's just trying to make her ends meet. So it would make sense for her in this position to be sort of working-ish for the Power Broker, but at the same time, we just don't really know exactly what she's doing. Yeah. So I'm very interested, but we'll see.
Yeah, she might have been like seduced and recruited by the Ten Rings, you know? Like, I could see her getting approached in Madripoor in a bar saying, like, hey, so your government abandoned you, right?
Yeah.
Thaddeus Ross labeled you an enemy of the state. You have to come here now. But you have some interesting skills. How would you like to work in security for us? And because she's such a badass, now she's like one of the big assassins in Madripoor working underneath the Power Broker. And like, she was the sniper in that window. She threw a knife in some guy's arm. She used a guy as a human shield. She's basically John Wick now. Like, that's interesting. I don't know if she had that. I mean, she was a badass shield agent before, but now she's like vicious. And that might have just been survival skills, but it's just, it's weird that Steve would have abandoned her over the course of 2 years. I just assumed between Winter Soldier or between Civil War and Infinity War that, like, even though Sharon Carter wasn't with the three of them, tracking, like, Vision and Wanda through Europe, I just assumed that, like, she was being taken care of, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she was, you know, she wouldn't have needed to become this crazy arts dealer in Madripoor. She could have, like, gotten by just, you know, through her old spy contacts or something.
Yeah, she could have easily helped, yes, helped Steve in Infinity War, you know, just been on his team, because why not? They're all on the run. Let's be on the run together, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, why couldn't she help them? She's like, let me go along. They're like, oh, there's only room for three people in this car. There's a fourth seat. But it's like, no, Sam likes to put his seat way back. He doesn't like to move it up.
Right.
But I can crouch. No, sorry. Bye.
It's like, we just don't got the room. Sorry. It's
just, yeah. Now, do you think, MT, that Sharon Carter was alive during the blip? Because did I miss something there? Like, maybe that's how she spent all this time building things. But
I would, you know, I would assume that Sharon Carter was alive during the blip.
Okay.
Because she does seem to have been entrenched in Madripoor for a while. So I would guess 5 years would be enough to turn this woman into a killing ruthless Madripoor machine. Madripoor murder machine, to keep the alliteration up.
I think 5 years is enough time for her to become like a high ranking security worker for the Power Broker's network, but not to take over like an entire criminal enterprise where people are saying Power Broker's watching. They're referring to Sharon Carter, who's walking around in the street taking her hood off. Like, doesn't add up for sure.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I don't think that Sharon Carter's a Power Broker at all. Yeah. It doesn't.
I'll just say, if they reveal that, it's gonna be real lame, and it's gonna be another like, great, we got another Ralph
upsetting.
Boner. Yeah,
yeah, it would be sort of like like the Mandarin thing in Iron Man 3.
Right,
for
right.
Me. Just be like, come on, like, you couldn't just make a new character. That would be nice. Yeah. Just a new character would be cool.
All right, our next What the Falcon, MT, is what do you think is next for the Super Soldier Serum? We know the Flag Smashers want to give it to these kids, but did it look like they had these close-ups of the vials in Nagel's lab? Do you think anybody snatched any of those vials?
I think that those vaccines maybe in episode 2 could have contained some vials maybe, like that was being transported, which is why the Power Broker cares so much about, you know, his stuff being taken. Because, like, if it was just vaccines, I'm sure the Power Broker would be like, all right, they mess with me, but, you know, it won't be the end of the world. But since the Power Broker cares so much about this cargo, I would not be surprised if Carly stole a couple of
No, for sure. Yeah. Oh, no, I think that's totally the implication. I think the idea was those vaccines contained less concentrated doses of it, and they were going to disperse it to, people they considered worthy of it. But I'm talking about in the lab right as it was exploding and burning down. They had close up of those vials. I'm thinking, did Zemo grab one? Did Bucky or Sam grab one?
That is very interesting. I wouldn't put it past Zemo to grab one for himself because, you know, he's freshly out of prison and he's like, you know what? I'm gonna cause some mayhem. But at the same time, Zemo is very against super soldiers and superpowers. So, you know, but he might have taken one, put it in his pocket. He's like, I don't know what I'm gonna do with this, but it's better to have this than to not have this.
Right. It's the ultimate hypocrisy. I would say maybe he could use it as leverage or something to like force the Flag Smashers to heal or to, you know, get to John Walker and then like tempt him with it or something like that. And then get a permanent, you know, pardon or something. Like, I'll hand you over this cocktail. But yeah, at the end of the day, he does hate the whole concept of super soldiers.
But what I do think is going to happen, and it's something that I feel like this episode is teasing with John Walker. We see John Walker really just angry in this episode and being like a mega dick. And I feel like a lot of that frustration comes from his lack of power because people don't find him. And I feel that he feels that people don't find him intimidating because he doesn't have the strength of Captain America. And so I feel like this is setting up the seeds for I need power. And then he's going to go to the power broker or, you know, maybe come across one of Nagel's vials and take it himself and then get juiced up and then pretend like he wasn't juiced up. I don't know.
I think he might already have. I think his anger in that moment was about respect. Like, he's mad that people don't see him as a replacement Cap, and he still carries the shield. He wears a similar costume. He has the same name, but people know they're not afraid to spit in his face because they don't respect him. But, like, I would also say if Steve Rogers were doing what John Walker was doing, he also would have gotten a loogie to the face. It's not that he's not Steve Rogers. It's that he of a police. We have this whole opening image of like the GRC. What a great thing. Smash cut to police van opens up on the shield. Like, this guy, he's raiding it. He's like screaming at people. Steve Rogers didn't do that, you know?
Yeah. And like, you know, obviously, you know, Captain America, with John Walker anyway, is just a symbol. And this guy who was harboring the Flag Smashers was like, yo, F symbols. And you're a Captain Symbol. So like, you know,
Captain
F you.
Symbol.
But yeah, no, yeah, totally. John Walker, he's trying to become, he's like you said in episode 2, the best Captain America that he can be.
Yeah.
So with him not being respected, he's just like, I'm not really Captain America, am I? Ah, this is so frustrating.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, I do like what the direction that they're taking John Walker.
And yeah, me too.
I hope that he goes more crazy, honestly.
Oh, me too, yeah. Now, we talked about Zemo a little bit there. What the Falcon does Zemo know? Like, do you think he has an ulterior motive? Is he hiding something from Sam and Bucky? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I think that there's probably some major Hydra secrets and stuff that he knows about the Super Soldier program that he's not telling Sam and Bucky. And he's 100% using them. And like, when Sam and Bucky started getting shot and like running away, and like, you know, that shot that we see in the trailer, I thought that Zemo just dipped. I thought he was gone, but he came back and with the mask on, and he was just tearing shit up. And so,
what do you think is the significance behind that mask? Like, there was a moment where he lingered on the mask on the dashboard. There was a like trunks full of other treasures in that garage. Like, there were golden guns, there were knives, there was all this other gear. It seemed to be alluding at some other super villainy past. With Zemo, he kind of felt like a goofy Bond villain, didn't he? This episode,
it sort of did, and I sort of felt like this might have been like maybe like a family thing or like. Or a family tradition where like they're just like thieves or something, and like they wear that little ski mask and do crimes, it's just something that he used to wear back in his back in the day when he was in just doing evil stuff or like being in like a or I don't know. I do feel like it's something connected to his past, and he's worn it a lot, and something that he usually takes into altercations like that.
It's interesting because the characterization, the backstory we got of him in Civil War is that he was just this Sokovian militant. He kind of led a death squad during these past conflicts of Sokovia. But now he describes himself as a royal. And he's like a royal without a country anymore.
Mm.
Which just feels like a comp. It feels like, you know, they'll have like Prince William or Prince Harry do a little bit. They'll do a tour of service in the British Armed Forces. It's kind of like this is just a rite of passage. They have to learn the steps of what their military units do.
Yeah.
But like that, now it just doesn't sit well with me. It felt like there was a version of Zemo in Civil War that worked and it was fine. And now the show is like, no, we're going to make him more like his comic book version. But, I didn't need Zemo to be rich. I don't know.
Yeah, like I do like the Zemo that we were sort of getting teased of in Civil War, like with I have a family and I was just a victim of terrible circumstances.
Yeah.
But like now that Zemo's rich, I'm just like, well, now I kind of care about your past a little bit less because you were pretty well to do. But at the same time, yeah. You know, it does suck to lose a family, so.
Right. It just felt like they made him rich so that they could have a private jet that Sam and Bucky could travel around the world without having to go through customs and stuff like
that. Yeah. It did seem a little bit like a plot moving forward element that they were just like, all right, he's rich and he has a plane, so we're going to Madripoor now.
Yeah. And there was like some kind of raw rage with him in Civil War that I feel like is lost. Now, don't get me wrong. I love what Daniel Brühl is doing with this. He was a delight to watch this episode.
He was fantastic.
Every time the camera cut to him, I was like, ooh, he's making a fun choice right
it's
now.
Daniel Brühl, my favorite.
It's just the plotting with the character. It's like, if you're bringing Zemo back, it seems like the writers of the show don't really know exactly what to do with Zemo and didn't really understand what Zemo was in Civil War. Not to say they have to. I mean, in Thor Ragnarok, Taika Waititi completely took over that world and made it his own, and it was great. But really, the world, the tone changed, but the character stayed true. Thor was just as bit as self-obsessed and took himself way too seriously, as was Loki. Loki was still a huge ego. Hulk was really maybe the only one who changed because he actually had a personality now. But it was justified by the nature of that world. So really it was just a world around him that felt goofy and changed, so we went along with it. It's different when you take a character and fundamentally things that were important to them before are no longer important. Bucky, for example, like he would not care that much about hunting down the super soldier serum so much that he would go confront this guy who ruined his life, even further in Civil War and was in prison and then break him out of prison in this kind of rushed, last minute prison break that felt like a lame Ocean's 11 thing.
It would have been a lot cooler if we saw like the planning and just like if that would have been a much more thought out sequence.
Right. Anything. Like, I mean, it doesn't have to be Shawshank Redemption or Silence of the Lambs, like two of the best cinematic prison escapes that really kept you guessing exactly how this is going to go out.
Yeah.
But like, really, you're just going through the classic, oh, there's a prison riot, and I'm going to put on a prison guard uniform, steal his badge, and get out, and just, like, avoid cameras. It felt like a joke, and it felt like kind of disservice to the badass version of Zemo that we were presented in Civil War.
Yeah, and, like, you know, Zemo is this super smart guy. So if it was as simple as, all right, create a distraction so I can get out, I feel like he would have done that a long time ago, because it seems like a very... It seemed very easy for Zemo to just escape. He's just like, all right, put on a costume and then now I'm out.
It was
super quick. So
super quick. Hey, look, this is a TV show. we still enjoy most of what's going on here. I don't want to gripe too much. But in terms of what Zemo's next step is, he seems to be a guy without a country. Obviously, he's going to betray Sam and Bucky at some point. I just want to know what it's going to be over. MT, before we started rolling, you mentioned this idea that Zemo, would he go kill Isaiah Bradley as another super soldier?
Because Zemo was not about super soldiers at all. And with Isaiah's blood being a factor in the creation of more super soldiers, I feel like Zemo's just probably like, you know what? Let's just get that out of the picture. Like, because this is a factor that's still here. He's alive. It's a 90-year-old factor. Let's just get rid of it. I mean, why not? I mean, just so we just don't have any more super soldiers, so we can stop the power broker from we get rid of all of his vials, and then we get rid of Isaiah, and now there's no more problem. Well, depending on where Steve is, we don't really know what happened to Steve, but it's really sounding like in this episode that they keep using past tense with Steve, and I'm just like, is he really gone? I hope not. But
yeah, see, we'll I see. think. I think Zemo is going to kill John Walker. I think John Walker might go early.
Interesting. Really?
Because Sam and Bucky get that shield back. We've seen that in all the promo footage, and it's like, would he part with that shield? I don't think that shield's a prop shield. I don't think there's multiple shields. I think there's just that one shield. And I think some mission where they all end up in a snowy field together, based off of set photos where, you know, the four of them are together and it's snowy, and based off of, like, you know, how if Zemo, like, that would be his ultimate revenge. He actually gets to kill the new Captain America. I think that would be wild. And I think that would give us a full arc for John Walker as someone who started sympathetic. It would make us feel a bit bad for John Walker as just another government instrument who ends in the, you know, doesn't really get his own life at the end of the day. And that would make Zemo part from these two, and they would get the shield back, you know, or they could get the shield back. Because somehow they're going to have to get it back. And I just don't know how John Walker's going to part ways with it otherwise.
I mean, man, that's a very interesting. If Zemo does kill John Walker, I will scream audibly. I will be like, oh, Eric was right.
And just do that if I'm wrong, or when I'm wrong. Just say, oh, Eric was wrong.
Eric was right still. But no, that would be crazy if Zemo kills Walker, because they're setting up Walker's character to be like this really like torn and this person struggling to fill in Cap's shoes. So for them just to be like, all right, you struggled and you failed and now you're dead. That'd be some baller shit. I would love that. It would be crazy. It would be some like Game of Thrones-ish type stuff. Yeah. Well, good era Games of Thrones.
Well, we do have three more episodes of this series left, so time is running out, but yes. I'm so excited to see what they do next. We're going to leave it there for this episode of Inside Marvel, our after show for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I want to thank MT for diving into this episode with me.
Hey, thank you for, you know, being with me as well, because are amazing to talk
to. It is a gift. MT and I are going to be back next Friday for our reaction to episode 4 and our after show. We're going to answer all the questions you've had about it. And make sure to follow MT at Mastertainment, follow me at EA Boss, follow New Rockstar, subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for watching. We're going to jump now to our stereo listeners, because we have the simulcast in stereo. We're going to take your questions. So get ready, stick around. But for now, we're going to close out with our favorite moment of the episode, which has got to be...